Hi, this is Jane from the Talking Information Center. Today we will be reading from the Wednesday, February 18th edition of Reuters News. Americans believe Epstein files show the powerful get a pass, a Reuters Ipsos poll finds, by Jason Lange. Americans believe that wealthy and powerful people are rarely held accountable, a new Reuters Ipsos poll found after the release of millions of records on the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's connections in elite U.S. business and political circles. Some 69% of respondents in the four-day poll, which concluded on Monday, said their views were captured very well or extremely well by a statement that the Epstein files, quote, show that powerful people in the U.S. are rarely held accountable for their actions, end quote. Another 17% said the statement described their view somewhat well, while 11% said it didn't reflect their thinking. Among both Republicans and Democrats, more than 80% said the statement described their thinking at least somewhat well. Under congressional orders, the U.S. Justice Department has released trove after trove of documents that tie the late financier to a range of prominent people in politics, finance, academia, and business, both before and after he pleaded guilty in 2008 to prostitution charges, including soliciting an underage girl. Epstein's 2019 death in a Manhattan jail cell following his arrest on charges of sex trafficking of minors was ruled a suicide. The scandal has proven a persistent political headache for President Donald Trump, who long fanned the flames of suspicions around Epstein and has been dogged by criticism that his administration was failing to fully disclose all that the U.S. government knew about the case. Some consequences in corporate America. The disclosures have started to cause the downfall of prominent people. Executives at Goldman Sachs and Hyatt Hotels have resigned. Others have retained powerful posts. Trump's Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick apparently visited Epstein's private island for lunch in 2012 and invited him to a fundraiser in 2015 for Hillary Clinton, Trump's Democratic rival in the 2016 presidential election, emails show. Dr. Mehmet Oz, Trump's administrator of the U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, emailed an invitation to a Valentine's Day party in 2016 to Epstein, the Justice Department documents show. Neither Lutnick nor Oz is accused of wrongdoing. The Republican president, who socialized extensively with Epstein's in the 1990s and 2000s, has denied any knowledge of the financier's crimes and says he broke off ties in the early 2000s before Epstein's plea deal. While Americans generally have low expectations that elites will be held accountable, they are somewhat split along partisan lines on how much longer the nation should dwell on the Epstein affair. Asked if their views were well described by the statement that it's time for the country to move on from talking about the Epstein files, 67% of Republican respondents in the poll said this captured their thinking at least somewhat well, while only 21% of Democrats said the same. The Reuters Ipsos poll, conducted online and nationwide, gathered responses from 1,117 U.S. adults and had a margin of error of 3 percentage points. As U.S. agriculture flails, farmers see big corn acres as the best bet to break even. By Julie Ingorson. In Chicago, U.S. farmers, though punished by slumping prices after last year's monster corn harvest, are expected to cut back only slightly on their plantings of the grain in 2026 as they brace for a fourth straight year of narrow profit margins or even losses. Farmers expect corn, the most widely grown U.S. crop, to hew close to break-even levels this year, supported by strong usage. Some see soybeans as riskier, given rising competition from Brazil and a volatile U.S. trade relationship with top buyer China. Right now, you absolutely cannot make money on beans, said Tim Gregerson, who farms in eastern Nebraska. You can probably break even on corn, but you're going to have an extraordinary yield or a price increase, Gregerson said. Most growers in America's Midwest Farm Belt grow both crops, alternating what gets planted on each field from year to boost soil health. Many add wheat, sorghum, cotton, or other crops to their rotations. But among farmers who have some flexible acres where they can plant anything, many see corn as their best bet. Planting decisions for 2026, hashed out in the winter months, mark the first step in determining the amount of grain produced in the world's largest corn-exporting nation and the second biggest soybean supplier after Brazil. Decisions are particularly challenging this year, after the U.S. Agriculture Department made unprecedented revisions in January to its estimate of the last season's harvested corn acreage, which, along with larger-than-expected estimates of the 2025 corn yield and stocks on hand as of December 1st, pushed down prices. Ahead of the USDA's annual outlook forum this week, analysts surveyed by Reuters on average projected corn plantings for 2026 at 94.9 million acres, down about 4% from last year's 89-year high, but still the second most corn acres in 13 years. The poll put soybean plantings at 84.9 million acres, in line with the 10-year average and up from the 81 million acres seeded in 2025, which was a six-year low. U.S. farmers grew the biggest corn crop in history last year at more than 17 billion bushels, stuffing the nation's grain bins and weighing on Chicago Board of Trade corn futures. However, a record pace of export sales and robust demand from ethanol producers has kept a floor under prices as acreage ideas for 2026 take shape. Even with rising costs for inputs such as seed and fertilizer, CBOT December corn futures representing the 2026 harvest are hovering near $4.60 a bushel, close to break-even levels for farmers. The market is signaling we don't want you to cut too many corn acres. We don't need as many as last year, but with today's demand base, it's not like we need a huge drop, said Frayne Olson, an agriculture economist with North Dakota State University. Pressures in farm country. Some U.S. farmers are struggling to stay solvent, even with increased government aid payments. Soybeans cost less to grow, and demand from domestic crushers and the burgeoning biofuels industry should help offset diminished export sales due to trade tensions with China, by far the world's largest buyer. China has purchased 12 million metric tons of U.S. soybeans since a late October trade truce. But prospects of future U.S. soy exports are uncertain, ahead of a planned April meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and China's President Xi Jinping. Meanwhile, farmers in Brazil have begun to reap a record-large soy harvest that should dominate the global soy trade. The soybean market is more of a political football than the corn market right now, said Dan O'Brien, an economist with Kansas State University. Big corn yields. Corn typically yields more than triple the grain per acre compared to soybeans. While a large output pressures prices, individual farmers can earn more. Last year's national corn yield was the highest on record at 186.5 bushels per acre, and state records were set in the number 3 and 4 growing states of Minnesota and Nebraska, as well as states farther on the fringe of the Corn Belt, like North Dakota. As they finish their cropping plans for 2026, farmers say they are looking for ways to cut costs. In Nebraska, Gregerson has stopped buying new machinery and has found ways to cut fertilizer use. He's considering cutting back on herbicide applications, but doing so would mean staying close to the farm throughout the growing season to scout crops especially closely. When you do that, you have live and die in a sprayer. You don't go on vacation in the spring or the summer. You have got to be so timely on killing your weeds. In North Dakota, farmer Phil Volk says growers in his area are delaying machinery repairs, skipping niceties like growth-promoting seed treatments on soybeans, and devoting most of their input costs to corn, his most profitable crop in 2025. Volk expects to expand his corn acreage this spring by 15% compared to last year. They are going to cut as many expenses on soybeans as possible and pour all the juice to corn, Volk said. Big food pours millions into rebrands as obesity drugs reshape U.S. demand. By Sriparna Roy and Juveria Tabassum. Global food and beverage companies from PepsiCo to Coca-Cola are focusing on shorter ingredient lists and smaller pack sizes in 2026 as more people take appetite-suppressing GLP-1 drugs for weight loss. Companies that previously took a wait-and-see attitude now see GLP-1s as here to stay. So far this year, nearly three dozen companies outside the healthcare industry have mentioned GLP-1 drugs or weight loss on their earnings conference calls, up from 14 for the same period a year ago, and just 5 2 years earlier, according to LSEG data. Diet changes linked to GLP-1 drug use could mean up to $12 billion in snack sales lost over the next decade, according to EY Parthenon estimates. Adoption of GLP-1 drugs, which suppress appetite and are mainly prescribed for diabetes and weight loss, more than doubled in the 12 months to December, with about 20% of U.S. households now including at least one user, according to a PwC analysis. Peter Terkelvate, CEO of Magnum Ice Cream, said GLP users continue to eat treats, but they exhibit a stark reduction of mindless munching and binge eating. Coca-Cola's incoming top boss urged faster innovation on his first analyst call as CEO-elect last week, while Kraft Heinz's new chief halted a planned split of the company and instead announced $600 million in investments this year to revive long-neglected staples such as its meat and cold cuts business, Oscar Mayer. GLP-1's rewrite demand. Capital expenditure is expected to rise for most big food companies this year, jumping as much as 23% for General Mills, according to LSEG data. PepsiCo has launched a line called Simply NKD to reformulate its snacks such as Lay's and Gatorade by removing artificial colors and flavors while also embracing smaller portion sizes. I think there are more opportunities than threats, but there are both, said PepsiCo's CEO Ramon Laguarta on a post-earnings call last week. Coca-Cola ramped up production to meet growing demand for its protein-infused Fairlife milk late last year. General Mills launched higher protein Cheerios cereal in December 2024 as it grapples with competition for breakfast foods. We expect GLP-1 and other anti-obesity drugs to have a lasting influence in the food and nutrition landscape, nudging some consumers toward smaller portions and more nutrient-dense protein and fiber-forward foods, the company's CEO, Jeffrey Harmening, said at the Consumer Analyst Group of New York conference on Tuesday. All in on R&D. Conagra Brands is investing in snacks such as its Slim Jim meat sticks, nuts and seeds, and issued a report last year that highlighted rising demand for protein-forward, portion-controlled, and nutrient-dense foods, especially among Gen Z and millennials. There's not anyone out there that's not designing, putting R&D dollars against this trend, said Peter Mangan, managing director at Portage Point Partners. Smaller businesses are seeing the opportunity as well. Snap Kitchen, a private Austin-based company that provides curated daily meals to roughly 35,000 customers annually, invested in expanding its menu with products containing higher fiber, lean protein density, and ingredients shown to promote satiety to reflect changing tastes, said CEO Mitchell Raich. The GLP-1 opportunity has sharpened our focus and accelerated our pipeline, Raich said. GLP users on average consume 40% fewer calories, according to PwC's analysis of data from consumer insights firm Numerator. Dessert consumption is down 84% and alcohol use is down by 33%, while fresh produce intake is up by more than 70%. Family grocery baskets are 4-6% smaller, according to the data, while single-person households have experienced declines of up to 9%. We're just starting to scratch the surface on the ripple effects of this type of physiological disruption, said Ali Furman, PwC U.S. Consumer Markets Leader. Trump's immigration approval hits new low, according to Reuters Ipsos poll by Jason Lange. U.S. public approval of Donald Trump's immigration policies fell to the lowest level since his return to the White House, amid signs he's losing support among American men on the issue, according to a new Reuters Ipsos poll. Just 38% of respondents in the four-day poll, which closed on Monday, said Trump was doing a good job on immigration, a priority issue for the administration. The rating was down from 39% in a January Reuters Ipsos poll and as high as 50% in the months shortly after Trump returned to power. Trump campaigned ahead of his re-election in 2024 on a promise to launch the biggest deportation drive in decades and order sweeping immigration raids immediately after he returned to office in January 2025. Masked agents in tactical gear are now a common sight in America, and immigration agents have clashed violently with U.S. protesters and activists. The latest Reuters Ipsos poll shows support for Trump's handling of immigration has fallen significantly among men in recent weeks compared to late last year. Male voters played an outsized role in Trump's 2024 election victory, and throughout 2025, his immigration approval rating among men stayed close to 50%. But the latest Reuters Ipsos poll survey showed 41% of men give him a thumbs up on the issue. Among women, Trump's support on immigration has fallen from around 40% through most of 2025 to 35% in the latest survey. In a rare retreat for Trump, his administration last week said it had agreed to end his hotly protested deportation surge in Minnesota, where immigration agents fatally shot two U.S. citizens. Trump started his term with his overall approval at 47%, but in recent weeks his rating has held at the lowest levels of his presidency, with 38% of respondents in the latest poll approving of his performance, unchanged from a January 23rd through 25th poll. The latest poll, which is conducted online and nationwide, gathered responses from 1,117 U.S. adults and had a margin of error of 3 percentage points. Allegations in Epstein files may amount to crimes against humanity, UN experts say, by Jasper Ward. Millions of files related to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein suggest the existence of a global criminal enterprise that carried out acts meeting the legal threshold of crimes against humanity, according to a panel of independent experts appointed by the United Nations Human Rights Council. The experts said crimes outlined in documents released by the U.S. Justice Department were committed against a backdrop of supremacist beliefs, racism, corruption, and extreme misogyny. The crimes, they said, showed a commodification and dehumanization of women and girls. So grave is the scale, nature, systematic character, and transnational reach of these atrocities against women and girls that a number of them may reasonably meet the legal threshold of crimes against humanity, the experts said in a statement. The expert said the allegations contained in the files require an independent, thorough, and impartial investigation, and said inquiries should also be launched into how it was possible for such crimes to be committed for so long. The U.S. Justice Department did not immediately respond to a request for comment. A law approved by Congress with broad bipartisan support in November requires all Epstein-related files to be made public. The UN experts raised concerns about serious compliance failures and botched redactions that exposed sensitive victim information. More than 1,200 victims were identified in the documents that have been released so far. The reluctance to fully disclose information or broaden investigations has left many survivors feeling re-traumatized and subjected to what they describe as institutional gaslighting, the experts said. The Justice Department's release of documents has revealed Epstein's ties to many prominent people in politics, finance, academia, and business, both before and after he pleaded guilty in 2008 to prostitution charges, including soliciting an underage girl. He was found hanged in his jail cell in 2019 after being arrested again on federal charges of sex trafficking of minors. His death was ruled a suicide. CBS host Stephen Colbert says network barred airing interview with Texas U.S. Senate candidate by David Shepherdson. CBS late night show host Stephen Colbert said on Monday that the network's lawyers barred him from airing an interview with Democratic Texas State Representative James Tallarico, who's running for his party's nomination for the U.S. Senate. Donald Trump's administration wants to silence anyone who says anything bad about Trump on TV, because all Trump does is watch TV, Colbert said on Monday's broadcast of The Late Show. The Republican-led FCC said last month that daytime and late-night TV talk shows are no longer considered bona fide news programs that are exempt from equal time rules that require them to give airtime to the views of opposing candidates. Colbert criticized FCC Chair Brendan Carr and the network's lawyers, saying they were unilaterally enforcing Carr's directive for purely financial reasons. Those words echoed the explanation Paramount provided when it announced in July that Colbert's program would go off the air in May as it was seeking approval from the Federal Communications Commission for its $8.4 billion merger with Skydance Media. Reuters and other outlets reported earlier this month that the FCC is opening an investigation into whether ABC's The View daytime talk show violated equal time rules for interviews with political candidates after an appearance by Tallarico. President Donald Trump has repeatedly pushed Carr to take action against U.S. broadcasters and criticized networks for what he views as one-sided coverage. Colbert posted the interview on the program's YouTube page, where it has about 2 million views as of 3 p.m. Eastern Time Tuesday, and millions more views on other platforms. CBS said in a statement that the decision followed legal guidance that the broadcast could trigger the FCC equal time rule for two other candidates, including Representative Jasmine Crockett, and presented options for how the equal time for other candidates could be fulfilled. CBS added the show decided to present the interview through its YouTube channel with on-air promotion on the broadcast rather than potentially providing the equal time options. Changing landscape for talk shows. Until January, talk shows were deemed to have qualified for the equal opportunities exemption as genuine news interviews. Ever since the FCC Media Bureau granted an exemption to the interview portion of Jay Leno's The Tonight Show in 2006. Networks have relied on the ruling as a precedent for recent interviews with political candidates. Carr, Paramount, Skydance, and CBS did not respond to requests for comments on Colbert's remarks. The White House declined to comment. FCC Commissioner Ana Gomez, a Democrat, criticized CBS's decision not to air the interview, calling it censorship. She said the FCC has no lawful authority to pressure broadcasters for political purposes, and CBS has free speech rights to air the interview. This is yet another troubling example of corporate capitulation in the face of this administration's broader campaign to censor and control speech, Gomez said. It is no secret that Paramount, CBS's parent company, has regulatory matters before the government, but corporate interests cannot justify retreating from airing newsworthy content. Paramount Skydance is seeking to buy Warner Brothers Discovery. Carr faced bipartisan criticism after pressuring broadcasters to take ABC late-night talk show host Jimmy Kimmel off the air in September, warning they could face fines or loss of licenses, and said it's time for them to step up. Two major broadcasters said they would pull Kimmel off the air, and Disney briefly suspended Kimmel before restoring the show. In December, Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin told Carr, "You used your position within the federal government to take Jimmy Kimmel off the air in a clear attempt to chill free speech." Wall Street rises as tech stocks rebound. Fed Minutes on Tap by Shashwat Shahan. U.S. stock indices edged up on Wednesday as technology stocks extended gains after recent weakness, while investors awaited minutes of the central bank's latest policy meeting for insight on the interest rate trajectory. Wall Street has been rocked this month by worries that rapidly improving AI tools could disrupt business models, leading to sell-offs in sectors from software to trucking. Broader AI-linked and mega-cap technology stocks also lost ground as investors demanded stronger evidence the heavy investments in the technology were tangibly boosting revenue and profits. "We've not really seen much of a drawdown, just a lot of daily volatility, which implies that the market is more at a crossroads and waiting for some sort of a bullish or bearish catalyst to push it in a new direction," said Sam Stovall, CFRA's chief investment strategist. Most megacap and growth stocks rose on the day, with NVIDIA gaining 1.5% after the company said it had signed a multi-year deal to sell Meta Platforms millions of its current and future AI chips. Other megacaps also advanced. Amazon rose 1.6%, while Alphabet and Microsoft inched up. The S&P 500 Materials and Energy Indices added 0.6% and 1.1% respectively, rebounding from the previous session's losses. Conversely, declines in health shares and consumer staples capped gains, with retail giant Walmart down 1.3% ahead of its results on Thursday. Minutes from the U.S. Federal Reserve's January policy meeting, where it held its main lending rate steady, are expected at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Traders are pricing in a chance of roughly 63% for a rate cut of at least 25 basis points at the Fed's June meeting, the first with odds above 50%, according to CME's FedWatch tool. The Personal Consumption Expenditure Report, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, will be in focus later this week and is expected to provide insights into inflation and how it could impact borrowing costs. At 9:40 a.m. Eastern Time, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 127.97 points to 49,661.16. The S&P 500 added 16.43 points to 6,859.65, and the Nasdaq Composite gained 54.94 points to 22,633.32. In earnings-led moves, Analog Devices shares rose 3.8% after the chipmaker forecast second-quarter results above Wall Street estimates. Global Payments gained 10.7% after the company projected annual adjusted profit above expectations. Moderna climbed 5.7% after the U.S. Food and Drug Administration agreed to review its influenza vaccine, reversing an earlier decision rejecting the application. Palo Alto Networks dropped 9.3% after the cybersecurity company trimmed its annual profit forecast, while Cadence Design Systems added 6.5%, after the chip design software provider beat fourth quarter revenue estimates. Hard disk drive maker Western Digital plans to raise $3.17 billion by selling some of its stake in former unit SanDisk through a secondary share sale, sending SanDisk's shares lower by 1.6%. Advancing issues outnumbered decliners by a 1.5-to-1 ratio on the New York Stock Exchange and by a 1.23-to-1 ratio on the NASDAQ. The S&P 500 posted 9 new 52-week highs and 3 new lows, while the NASDAQ composite recorded 33 new highs and 47 new lows. Meta's Zuckerberg faces questioning at youth addiction trial, by Jody Godoy. In Los Angeles, Meta Platform CEO and billionaire Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg is sent to be questioned for the first time in a U.S. court on Wednesday about Instagram's effect on the mental health of young users as a landmark trial over youth social media addiction continues. While Zuckerberg has previously testified on the subject before Congress, the stakes are higher at the jury trial in Los Angeles, California. Meta may have to pay damages if it loses the case, and the verdict could erode big tech's long-standing legal defense against claims of user harm. The lawsuit and others like it are part of a global backlash against social media platforms over children's mental health. Australia has prohibited access to social media platforms for users under age 16, and other countries, including Spain, are considering similar curbs. In the U.S., Florida has prohibited companies from allowing users under age 14. Tech industry trade groups are challenging the law in court. The case involves a California woman who started using Meta's Instagram and Google's YouTube as a child. She alleges the company sought to profit by hooking kids on their services, despite knowing social media could harm their mental health. She alleges the apps fueled her depression and suicidal thoughts and is seeking to hold the companies liable. Meta and Google have denied the allegations and pointed to their work to add features that keep users safe. Meta has often pointed to a National Academies of Sciences finding that research does not show social media changes kids' mental health. The lawsuit serves as a test case for similar claims in a larger group of cases against Meta, Alphabet's Google, Snap, and TikTok. Families, school districts, and states have filed thousands of lawsuits in the U.S. accusing the companies of fueling a youth mental health crisis. Zuckerberg is expected to be questioned on Meta's internal studies and discussions of how Instagram use affects younger users. Over the years, investigative reporting has unearthed internal Meta documents showing the company was aware of potential harm. Meta researchers found that teens who report that Instagram regularly made them feel bad about their bodies saw significantly more eating disorder-adjacent content than those who did not, Reuters reported in October. Adam Mosseri, head of Instagram, testified last week that he was unaware of a recent Meta study showing no link between parental supervision and teens' attentiveness to their own social media use. Teens with difficult life circumstances more often said they used Instagram habitually or unintentionally, according to the document shown at trial. Meta's lawyer told jurors at the trial that the woman's health records show her issues stem from a troubled childhood and that social media was a creative outlet for her. Environmental groups challenged Trump's decision to revoke the basis of U.S. climate regulations, by David Shepherdson. A coalition of health and environmental groups sued the Trump administration on Wednesday over its decision to revoke the scientific finding that forms the basis of U.S. climate regulations. The legal challenge filed in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia also challenges the Environmental Protection Agency's decision announced last week to repeal tailpipe rules that limit greenhouse gas emissions from cars and trucks. The groups suing include the Center for Biological Diversity, American Lung Association, American Public Health Association, Union of Concerned Scientists, National Resources Defense Council, Public Citizens, and the Sierra Club. The EPA on Thursday said it would repeal the 17-year-old endangerment finding and also ended federal greenhouse gas emission standards for all vehicles and engines from model years 2012 to 2027. The EPA did not immediately comment. The move represents the most sweeping climate change policy rollback by the administration to date, after a string of regulatory cuts and other moves intended to unfetter fossil fuel development and stymie the rollout of clean energy. The EPA said the repeal and end of vehicle emission standards will save U.S. taxpayers $1.3 trillion. The administration of then-President Joe Biden said in 2024 the rules would have net benefits to consumers through lower fuel costs and other savings. At the time, the EPA said consumers were expected to save an average of $6,000 over the lifetime of new vehicles from reduced fuel and maintenance costs. Trump has said he believes climate change is a hoax and has withdrawn the United States from the Paris Agreement, leaving the world's largest historic contributor to global warming out of international efforts to combat it, in addition to killing Biden-era tax credits aimed at accelerating deployment of electric cars and renewable energy. The endangerment finding was first adopted by the United States in 2009 and led the EPA to take action under the Clean Air Act to curb emissions of carbon dioxide, methane, and four other heat-trapping air pollutants from vehicles, power plants, and other industries. Its repeal would remove the regulatory requirements to measure, report, certify, and comply with federal greenhouse gas emission standards for cars, but may not initially apply to stationary sources such as power plants. The transportation and power sectors are each responsible for around a quarter of U.S. greenhouse gas output, according to EPA figures. California and Connecticut preparing an attack against Trump's repeal of the basis of U.S. climate regulation by Ampirip Roy and Peter Henderson. California and Connecticut are working together on a multi-state plan of attack against President Donald Trump's repeal of the foundation of federal climate regulation of vehicles, the state's attorneys general told Reuters on Tuesday. In what Trump has said was the country's biggest deregulatory action, the Environmental Protection Agency last week rescinded the endangerment finding that said greenhouse gas emissions from vehicles endanger public health. "We're going to take action," Connecticut Attorney General William Tong said in an interview, describing efforts to work out standing, claims, and other elements of a suit. "We're putting together our best possible plan of attack." The EPA has used the endangerment finding as the basis for regulating power plants, automakers, and oil and gas operations. Transport and power account for about half of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. Legal experts have also said the move could lead to a surge in lawsuits known as public nuisance actions, a pathway that had been blocked following a 2011 Supreme Court ruling that regulation of greenhouse gas emissions should be left in the hands of the EPA instead of the courts. California Attorney General Rob Bonta said in the interview that the states were looking at the facts and law to challenge the original action. The attorneys general did not provide a timeline, although Bonta indicated they would not delay. "We're not going to bring a lawsuit in 6 months. The temporal nexus to the action is important, but getting it right and making sure everything's tight is important, too." Commentary. Booming liquefied natural gas exports may get dragged into U.S. cost of living debate by Gavin McGuire. From Littleton, Colorado, U.S. exporters of liquefied natural gas, LNG, consumed more natural gas than both households and commercial businesses last year, tightening U.S. gas supplies and putting the LNG export boom squarely in the frame of discussion surrounding rising U.S. energy costs. Liquefied natural gas exporters gobbled up a record 5,000 billion cubic feet of natural gas during January to November of 2025, the latest data from the U.S. Energy Information Administration shows. That total sharply exceeds the roughly 4,000 BCF of gas consumed by residences and the 3,000 BCF consumed by commercial sites during that period, and means LNG exporters are now the third largest U.S. gas consumer behind industry and power firms. The U.S. LNG export tally was 25% higher than in the same period of 2024 and accompanied a 61% rise in the benchmark U.S. natural gas price, the Henry Hub spot price, last year. As natural gas power plants account for around 40% of U.S. electricity supplies, the most of any power source, that run up in natural gas costs in turn fed into electricity bills for consumers, which hit all-time highs last year. With U.S. households already grappling with record costs for insurance, housing, food, and medical care, pushback against further increases in power bills is likely to be a major issue among voters in the run-up to this year's midterm elections. That in turn means that LNG exporters who compete with households and power firms for gas could come under fire, even as additional LNG export capacity is due to come online and lift potential U.S. LNG export volumes even higher. Steep gains. The total amount of gas procured by U.S. LNG exporters during the first 11 months of 2025 marked a 209% increase compared with the same months in 2019. In contrast, total gas consumption by residences, commercial sites, which include restaurants, hospitals, and retail stores, industry, and power firms, increased by an average of 3% over that same span. That means that LNG exporters have been by far the fastest-growing source of U.S. gas demand within the past decade and have resulted in dramatic shifts in domestic gas market dynamics, which are characterized by tighter gas supplies for other consumers and greater volatility in natural gas prices. On the price front, every major consumer group faced steeply higher gas costs in 2025 compared to 2019, with residences and commercial sites registering roughly 50% increases, while industry and power firms grappled with a roughly 30% climb. In response to such a steep climb in gas costs, several major end users have attempted to replace gas with alternative power sources, which in the case of households and businesses often meant electrification of heating and power systems. For power firms, higher output from renewable energy sources has been the main means of reducing gas reliance, although utilities also sharply raised output from cheaper coal-fired power plants in 2025 as gas costs jumped. LNG exporters can more easily absorb higher domestic gas costs than rival consumers, as the sale price of LNG in foreign markets remains multiple times the cost of local gas. Indeed, the average U.S. LNG export sale price in 2025 was roughly $7.87 per 1,000 cubic feet, which compared to an average of $3.66 per MCF for benchmark Henry Hub prices. That means that LNG exporters could easily add a $2 per MCF liquefaction fee as well as another $1 per MCF in shipping fees and still make a profit when selling the LNG overseas. With several LNG cargoes sold at even higher prices on the spot market, many LNG exporters recorded even heftier margins, which has spurred them to expand their export capacity as quickly as possible. Total North American LNG export capacity could more than double from 11.4 BCF in 2024 to 24.3 BCF by the end of 2027, according to the EIA's latest short-term energy outlook. If it materializes as planned, such a steep climb in potential export capacity will trigger a fresh surge in LNG export volumes and further tighten gas supplies for other domestic consumers. That, in turn, could result in even higher natural gas costs for all other gas buyers, including households for heating and power firms for generating electricity. Residences already face the highest gas costs of all consumers, with prices averaging around $19 per MCF in 2021, EIA data shows. But commercial and industrial users also pay far more than power firms for gas, with the commercial price averaging around $11.44 per MCF last year, and the industrial price averaging around $5.05. Even power firms, which have access to wholesale pools of gas that other consumers do not, also faced a steep climb in average gas costs last year to around $3.95 per MCF. That indicates that all major gas consumers are being squeezed by the ongoing boom in LNG export demand, and so could push back against any factors that threaten to further elevate the cost of such a critical resource. That in turn suggests that LNG exporters could come under intense scrutiny in 2026 and may face pressure to curb their expansion plans, even if doing so slows the pace of LNG sales and undermines the vision for U.S. energy export dominance. The opinions expressed here are those of the author, a columnist for Reuters. Walmart to tread with caution into 2026 as Ferner Era Begins, by Javeria Tabassum. Investors have been upbeat about Walmart for months, but Wall Street expects the largest U.S. retailer to take a measured approach to its annual forecasts when it reports results on Thursday, as new CEO John Furner steers the company through a fragile consumer landscape. The company's market value recently crossed $1 trillion, making it the first retailer to reach that milestone. Its 24% gain over the last year far outpaces packaged food companies that have struggled as consumers retrench. This quarter will be the first time investors hear from Ferner, who took over as the CEO at the start of the month. Historically, management tends to be conservative when providing its initial guide for the year, said Greg Melich, analyst at Evercore ISI. He said investors are setting a high bar, given shares are running near all-time highs. Their outperformance has pushed its price-to-earnings valuation to about 45, higher than most of its peers. Fourth quarter revenue is expected to come in at $190.43 billion, according to data compiled by LSEG. Management changes. Along with Ferner taking the helm, Walmart made other key management changes, including the appointment of Amazon alumnus David Gugina as president and CEO of Walmart U.S., a sign of its shifting strategy that recognizes a more tech-driven approach. This is not a traditional appointment the old Walmart would make, though this is a different retailer than a decade ago. It's operating in new ways and with a different mindset, said UBS analyst Michael Lasser. That strategy is centered around AI-led digital transformation as it competes with Amazon, Costco, and Aldi. The company has invested heavily in AI to close gaps with its largest rival, Amazon, which had a head start with its chatbot, Rufus, a Gen AI-powered shopping assistant that answers various shopping inquiries. Walmart partnered with OpenAI to let customers shop through tools like ChatGPT and is using AI to enhance delivery speeds, recommendation engines, and overall customer experience, boosting online sales growth. Shoppers trade down. With a tougher economy prompting shoppers of all income brackets towards cheaper options, Walmart's value and growing delivery service has helped with not just its core low-income customers, but a growing cohort of higher-income households. Walmart has had additional success through its investments in AI to streamline operations and enhance the shopping experience. Executives have said wealthier shoppers have powered much of the retailer's recent U.S. sales gain, even as its lower income base feels the squeeze. Food makers from Kraft Heinz to General Mills have flagged similar softness in demand from financially strained consumers. In the last 5 years, Walmart has expanded its online marketplace to over 500 million items, launched one-hour delivery, created Walmart Plus to rival Amazon Prime, and built a $4 billion advertising business that has boosted margins, which have risen year over year for the past 10 quarters. Traffic to Walmart stores strengthened at the end of 2025, with visits up 2.3% in the fourth quarter from a year ago. That momentum accelerated in January 2026, according to data from Placer.ai. Since hitting $1 trillion in market value on February 3rd, at least 9 Wall Street brokerages have raised their target price on the stock, while 6 have lifted their fourth quarter profit estimate. We've heard a lot about the K-shaped consumer, but it's even more pronounced with Walmart because these higher income consumers have more of a propensity to use technology, and that has attracted consumers that would not have considered going to Walmart, said Sarah Henry, Managing Director and Portfolio Manager at Logan Capital Management, which owns shares in Walmart. The European Union probes Shein over sale of illegal products and addictive design by Fu Yun Chi. From Brussels, the European Union opened a formal investigation into Chinese online retailer Shein on Tuesday over illegal products and concerns about the platform's potentially addictive design, stepping up scrutiny under the bloc's Strict Digital Services Act. The move under the Act, which requires online platforms to do more to counter illegal and harmful content, came after France urged the EU executive in November to crack down on the sale of childlike sex dolls on Shein's platform. Shein has since then stopped the sale of all sex dolls worldwide. The company and its Chinese rival Temu have become the most high-profile symbols of broader concerns over the flow of cheap Chinese products into Europe. The Digital Services Act keeps shoppers safe, protects their well-being, and empowers them with information about the algorithms they are interacting with. We will assess whether Shein is respecting these rules and their responsibility, EU tech chief Hanna Virkkunen said in a statement. The Commission had flagged the possibility of an EU investigation last month. Additional safeguards rolled out, Shein says. Shein said it would continue to cooperate with the EU watchdog and that it had invested significantly in measures to strengthen compliance with the DSA, including conducting systemic risk assessments and mitigation frameworks and enhancing protection for younger users. In addition to enhancement of detection tools, we also accelerated the rollout of additional safeguards around age-restricted products, the company said, including age verification measures to prevent minors from viewing or purchasing age-restricted contents or products. The European Commission said it would investigate the systems Shein has put in place in the EU to limit the sale of illegal products, including potential child sexual abuse material. Addictive design could negatively impact users. The investigation will also focus on Shein's addictive design, including the award of points or rewards for engagement that could have a negative impact on users' well-being. The transparency of the recommender systems that Shein uses to propose content and products to users will also come under EU scrutiny. Temu was charged last year with breaching the DSA for not properly assessing the risks of illegal products sold on its platform. A final EU decision could come this year. There are ongoing EU investigations into its addictive design features and transparency of its recommendation systems, among others. Companies risk fines as much as 6% of their global annual turnover for DSA violations. Difficult Ukraine peace talks end after Zelensky says Russia is stalling. Peace talks between Ukraine and Russia in Geneva ended on Wednesday after only 2 hours, with President Vladimir Zelensky describing them as difficult and accusing Russia of deliberately delaying progress towards a deal to end the four-year-old war. The 2 days of U.S.-mediated peace talks in Switzerland took place as U.S. President Donald Trump has twice in recent days suggested it was up to Ukraine and Zelensky to ensure the talks were successful. We can see that progress has been made, but for now positions differ because the negotiations were difficult, Zelensky told reporters in a WhatsApp chat shortly after talks concluded. Rustem Umerov, the head of Kiev's negotiating team, said separately that the second day had been intensive and substantive. Both sides were working towards decisions that can be sent to their presidents, he said. Russia's chief negotiator, former culture minister Vladimir Medinsky, told reporters that further negotiations would be held soon without specifying a date. Earlier on Wednesday, Zelensky had accused Russia of trying to drag out negotiations that could already have reached the final stage. Ukrainian officials have routinely accused Moscow, which has carried out a winter bombing campaign against Ukraine's energy system and pursued its battlefield offensive, of negotiating in bad faith. In an interview with U.S. website Axios published on Tuesday, Zelensky was quoted as saying that it was not fair that Trump kept publicly calling on Ukraine, not Russia, to make concessions in negotiating terms for a peace plan. Trump had told reporters on Monday that, quote, Ukraine better come to the table fast. That's all I'm telling you, end quote. Zelensky also said any plan requiring Ukraine to give up territory that Russia had not captured in the eastern Donbas region would be rejected by Ukrainians if put to a referendum. I hope it is just his tactics and not the decision, Axios quoted Zelensky as saying in the interview. Umerov said on Tuesday after the first day of talks had focused on practical issues and the mechanics of possible decisions without providing details. However, Russian news agencies quoted a source as saying that the Tuesday talks were very tense and lasted 6 hours in different bilateral and trilateral formats. Before the talks began, Umerov had played down hopes for a significant step forward in Geneva, saying the Ukrainian delegation was working without excessive expectations. Russia occupies about 20% of Ukraine's national territory, including Crimea and parts of the eastern Donbas region seized before the 2022 full-scale invasion. Its recent airstrikes on energy infrastructure have left hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians without heating and power during a harsh winter.